Hello, I'm Dr. Neil Skolnick, Professor of Family and Community Medicine at the Sidney Kimmel Medical College of Thomas Jefferson University. Joining us today to discuss COVID-19 are three superb clinicians, Dr. Lena Wen, who is an ER physician and a public health professor at George Washington University. She previously served as Baltimore's health commissioner. She is the author of When Doctors Don't Listen. Her TED Talk on transparency in medicine has been viewed over 2 million times. And in 2019, Dr. Wen was named one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential people. Dr. Susan Fidler, who serves as faculty in the family medicine residency at Abington Jefferson Health and is an assistant professor of family and community medicine at the Sidney Kimmel Medical College of Thomas Jefferson University. She is in charge of the boots on the ground response to the COVID epidemic in our office in Montgomery County, a small county that until recently accounted for half of all the cases of COVID-19 in Pennsylvania. And last but not least, Aaron Sutton, a licensed clinical social worker who serves as the behavioral health consultant for the family medicine residency at Abington Jefferson Health and is in charge of the wellness program for clinicians across specialties at Abington Jefferson Health. I want to go on now to talk to Dr. Susan Fidler, who is going to give us a boots on the ground discussion, including things that are important to all of us, the changing look of symptoms for us as primary care clinicians, what should we be aware of, briefly touch on treatment, and then some general office issues. Sue.
Neil. So I really want to focus our discussion today for those clinicians who are working in the outpatient setting. Again, that's where I have been charged with creating tasks in our office to how to change how we do primary care, regarding this pandemic. So specifically with symptoms, CDC still is really just harping on fever, cough, shortness, and breath, the initial hallmarks of COVID infection. But what we're learning as time goes by is there are some other symptoms that can be more concerning, and especially folks who might have a more milder course of the disease may present with. And these include things like GI symptoms. Loss of taste and smell has become very common. And then those typical viral illness symptoms like myalgias and fatigue are very commonly seen. In terms of when this occurs, this can occur anywhere from 2 to 14 days after exposure. So you have to have a pretty high index of suspicion in our current climate regarding diagnosing COVID. What we also have to watch out for is when our patients are going to decompensate. So what's been shown is that folks who tend to decompensate with COVID-19 tend to decompensate somewhere in the 7 to 10 day range after their initial onset of symptoms. So again, us in the outpatient setting, as we're following along with our patients who have COVID and may be diagnosed and we're checking in on them, we want to keep that in mind. Some of the important treatment considerations for us in the outpatient setting that are worth discussing are the following. So in terms of treatment, there's been a little bit of controversy regarding anti-inflammatory medicines. And as it stands now, Tylenol or acetaminophen is preferred by the World Health Organization, although they don't give a discouraging statement about anti-inflammatories, but they do prefer Tylenol or acetaminophen. When we're thinking about how to treat folks, we also need to think about things like albuterol. We know that nebulization is a means to disperse the virus. So if someone has both an albuterol MDI and a nebulizer at home, we may want to push them to using the MDI such that they're not aerosolizing the virus for those folks who live around them. Other things that have been talked about, azithromycin. I think the current thought is probably not recommended for treatment of COVID-19 and should only be reserved if someone has signs of community-acquired pneumonia in addition to COVID-19 symptoms. There's also been a little bit of discussion about steroids and when it would be appropriate to use steroids. On the inpatient side, they do not think that steroids help in the treatment of COVID-19. However, if folks have asthma, COPD, and a true indication for oral steroids, it is okay to use them. But what you want to consider is using the lowest dose for the shortest duration for these patients, because again, the steroids could worsen the symptoms from the viral infection. And then I think in terms of all of the medications that are discussed in treatment of COVID-19, most of them are known to be used in the inpatient setting. One thing that we might see as an outpatient is our folks who are discharged from the hospital often can be discharged on hydroxychloroquine, and they may need some help actually getting this from their pharmacy. The pharmacies have become very particular in making sure that the appropriate patients get the hydroxychloroquine, as there's been folks who have been trying to hoard the medication, et cetera. So they may need our help in order to get the pharmacy records that they were currently, you know, or recently hospitalized and are going to be in need of that medication. So I think from an outpatient setting, those are some of the symptom and treatment items that have been coming up for us.
That's so helpful, Sue. And it has really been a very difficult area because it really seems like recommendations come out, often are reversed quickly. The issue around ACEs and NSAIDs are a great example. I think on March 18th, after a letter to Lancet Infectious Diseases mentioned the concern about NSAIDs, the World Health Organization issued a statement saying we shouldn't use NSAIDs. On March 19th, the next day, they reversed that statement and placed it in the manner that you said, a suggestion, but not saying we need to stay away from NSAIDs because the data just didn't support it. If that sort of rush to act on very little data was occurring at the level even of the World Health Organization, we as individual physicians also need to be careful not to take what we might hear on the 6 o'clock news as a promising treatment and suddenly start giving it to all of our patients, but rather wait till we hear some official statements from some governing bodies, whether it's the FDA, World Health, CDC, before broadly implementing every changing suggestion that comes out. So I think these are really tough, critical issues for us to deal with as individual clinicians and as a group of clinicians. I want to go on now to talk about another common issue in outpatient management. How do you advise patients who have been tested, are COVID positive, have mild illness, or are doing okay in home quarantine with the use of acetaminophen, drinking lots of fluids, and what do you tell them about home quarantine? How do you advise them with regard to interactions with family members? And when can they go back to work if they are in a needed profession or go out to the grocery store to get their groceries?
It's a great question. And so I think you have to think of it in terms of both the patient who's diagnosed with COVID-19 and then also their family members who have been exposed to them. So the patient themselves really should be in a separate room as much as possible. If they need to come into a shared space, you should try to increase the ventilation by opening a window, turning on the air conditioning, et cetera. Like Dr. Wen said, there is no replacement for good hand hygiene. So continuing good hand hygiene, especially in these circumstances. This is a time where you may want to consider using masks inside the home. So a mask on the patient, a mask on the caregiver when they need to be in close contact. So again, you know, you want to try and separate folks, keep them in their own bedroom, their own bathroom, not use similar household items. But there are times that the person who's ill is going to need something. And so again, trying to consider masking both parties in that circumstance, keeping their trash separate from their rest of the house. So all of those are things that we can do for the patient who's ill. So in terms of, you know, coming out of quarantine for both the patient and the family member, there's a few considerations. So for the patient, the CDC describes two separate ways that you can come out of quarantine. One of them is testing-based and requires a couple different negative tests. And I think in our current climate of difficulty getting tests and getting test results back, I know in our area, it can be up to a week for outpatient testing to come back. That one tends to be a little less practical. So what we've been going by is a symptom-based approach. So they have to meet several criteria. So they have to have 72 hours without fever, without any use of antipyretic medications, and their symptoms have to be improving, and it has to have been at least 7 days since the onset of their symptoms. So the fastest that anyone could come out of a home quarantine would be 7 days. So again, improving symptoms, 3 days without fever, and at least 7 days from the onset of their symptoms. So, you know, what becomes a little bit tricky from the family member standpoint is that if a family member is sick, it's 14 days of observation for those family members after the sick family member comes out of their quarantine. So when you look at this recommendation, and again, this is not clearly written out on the CDC, but most healthcare organizations, for example, if they have a sick family member at home, are saying, you know, once that family member is out of isolation and out of quarantine, that you should continue to stay home and stay isolated and away from work and a healthcare setting or an essential employee setting for another 14 days. So again, this has a big toll on the family when someone's sick at home with COVID.
Thanks so much. That is such a helpful, practical overview, Sue.